This is Table Talk with former California State Fire Marshal Ronnie J. Coleman and your host, Michael Williams.
Hello, welcome to Table Talk with former California State Fire Marshal Ronnie J. Coleman. I'm your host, Michael Williams. Chief, welcome to the table.
Glad to be back.
Let's talk about Going for the Goal, one of your many publications, but let's focus on the new rookie has just come onto the fire department, and he has a desire, or she has a desire, to be the fire chief or to be a fire chief. That's what they want to do. And so let's talk a little bit about what that person needs to be thinking about, where they want to focus their training and their education and their career path.
Now, that's an interesting way to start this off, because I don't believe very many people join the fire service ever thinking they're going to be a fire chief.
Really?
I really don't think that that's a driving force over entry-level people. Now, there are people who are exceptions to the rule. But people who choose the fire service as a profession, they join it because of a couple of things. One, it's a very visceral occupation. It's mm-hmm. physical. People who want to be firefighters are not exactly bookworms. They're not people who sit at the back of the classroom with a slide rule in their pocket. They're usually the ones that were the jocks and the ones who like the physical aspects. I don't know how many firefighters I've interviewed in my career, thousands, I suspect. But I don't ever remember any one of them ever really saying to me, I want to become a firefighter so I can be a fire chief someday. I can tell you of one captain who, when I was interviewing him in one department, I asked him, I said, where do you want to be in 5 years? And he said, I want your job. Now, him, I focused on because I wasn't quite sure I was ready to give up in 5 years. What we're talking about is this idea of upward mobility. I am of the opinion that most people don't make a choice as to what their career zenith might be until they're well along their career of 10, 15 years into their career. I don't think they make that initially. Now, Dr. Dennis O'Neill, superintendent of the Fire Academy, has one of the most outstanding presentations I've ever seen on this concept of professionalism. And what he asks is a kind of a rhetorical question, and that is, if you were going to become a doctor, would you know how to become one in high school? Yes, you could. If you were wanted to become an engineer, can you figure out how to be an engineer and senior in high school? Yeah, you can. But there's no set of ground rules for becoming a fire chief. It's a combination of a whole bunch of different things. What I think is going on right now, though, is that the group begins to separate itself into two groups early on in their career trajectory. If a person wants to go for the gold, they want the top job, then they better be thinking differently than what they did when they got the job. They need an education. They need broad-based experience. They need to develop a support network that's other than in the firehouse. And when we talk about upward mobility today, I think what we're talking about is people who start self-selecting themselves to be potential candidates.
Well, the job of fire chief, too, I think, is a lot different when you're there than what it looks like from the outside, correct?
From the bottom side.
Well, yeah.
I have had a lot of people call me up after we've done examinations. Say fire suppression battalion chiefs who went for a fire chief's job. They got the job, and they call me up 6 months later and go, oh, my God, if I'd known I was going to do all this stuff, I'm not sure I would have taken it. There's an unfortunate gap between the work of the top job and just about everybody else in the organization. And it's a cultural shift. When you step across that line to become the chief of department, there's a whole bunch of things that change. Some people are prepared to cope with that change, others are not.
I remember meeting with a sheriff from another county, and one of the things he was talking about was everything he had to sign when he became sheriff that he had no idea existed. And he'd come from another sheriff's department. He was not naive to law enforcement or how sheriff's departments work, but he was flabbergasted by the transition that you talked about, where you're actually now in the inner chamber and you are in charge, and it's your signature on the bottom of everything, not somebody else's. And what a mindset that changed him. Immediately he realized this was much more than what he thought it was.
Well, let's go back to your contention about when people first enter the fire service. My personal belief is that most people who enter the fire service are into the technology of the fire service. They're into the tools. They're into the techniques. They're into the skill sets of, you know, chopping things down, turning things on, et cetera. Whereas when you start aspiring to become the chief of a department, you start finding yourself needing to know things about economics and finance and human resources, ground rules, and politics. And when we use the word politics, I'm not using that as a pejorative term, you know, like bad politics. What I'm talking about is the fact that as a chief officer, you are involved in the political power structure in your community. You're part of the influence over how government is run and so forth. And when you step across that line, it's really a bigger gap than a lot of people are prepared for.
Let's talk about that. I perceive there are different types of fire chiefs in that you have the metropolitan, the Los Angeles, San Francisco, Fresno, the big metropolitan agencies. You have the moderate-sized metropolitan agencies. Anaheim would come to mind, Santa Ana, or here in Santa Barbara City, that kind of thing. And then you've got special districts, which is a whole different side of governance. And the dependent districts, say like a Santa Barbara County Fire is a dependent district, or an independent district, like a Carp Summerlin here locally. And then you have the volunteer world, which is a whole other different type of fire chief. Is there any definition as to where people should start thinking about where they want to be, or a transitional phase they should look at, or pick a target and go for it?
Give you one clue, one size doesn't fit all.
Yes.
Because the skill set that is required in each of those different environments has to be studied. And if you are aspiring for that upward mobility, you better pay attention. I'll give you a good example. Being a city fire chief is different than being a district fire chief. Because depending on the type of district that you are, you may or may not have certain kinds of functionality that you would not have as you were if you were a city fire chief. Two good examples. City fire chiefs usually have to deal with the director of finance, and they have to deal with the director of human resources. Whereas a district fire chief often is the finance officer,
right,
and often is the HR officer.
Well, there certainly seems to be more freedom, if you will, in the district approach than within a municipal approach because of that. Plus, you have city council and the city council board and what have you.
Well, I would not necessarily call it freedom as much as I would call it governance distinction.
Mm-hmm.
I've done a lot of examination processes for people attempting to make the transition. Good example, and I'm not going to name names, but a good example was recently I was working with a fire district that had some very specific issues that they had to address. And when we were interviewing the candidates, getting ready for them, we realized that a significant number of the candidates had never had any experience in dealing with the financial side of their department. They came from the operations side, which is, you know, they were given a budget and they were told how to spend it, but they never knew where the money came from.
Well, you've been a fire chief. You've been the state fire marshal, obviously dealing a lot with training and state fire training. You're currently the chair of the state committee. And so you've got an entire career based on training, but you mentioned education, and there's a big difference between education and training. How much emphasis are we putting in the education component in the fire service within the training community?
Well, let's go back and talk about Dr. Dennis O'Neill. I can't encourage you enough, if you're out there listening to this, to find out about Dr. Dennis O'Neill's perspective on professionalism. Go back and read what Dr. O'Neill says. As the chairman of the, or not the chairman, as the head of the superintendent of the fire administration, fire academy there in Emmitsburg, he says that education, training, and experience are the three sides of all this. Everybody should start becoming familiar with what they call the FESHE model, Fire Emergency Services Higher Education Model. Everybody needs to understand the implications of the certification process because it's not a single stairway to success. What it is a series of ladders that you got to climb.
Mm-hmm.
And those ladders have to do with credentialing, education, experience, and then you know what that fourth component is? Putting it all together. There is nobody today that has a single route to become a fire chief.
Right.
Multiple routes. Some people miss big portions of it before they suddenly find themselves being the chief, and they suddenly realize they got a gap in their education, their experience, or their training.
Well, when we look at the hiring process for fire chiefs, municipal, that's going to be the city manager.
Right.
And then it has to go to the city council. The county would be the county administrator or the CEO, whatever the term is.
That's correct.
Districts can be a little bit different, and certainly the volunteer world, you may just fall into the position. Each one of those is uniquely different in how that person needs to be looked at and its training background.
I would make the argument, however, that while they're all different, they have similarities. And I'll tell you what those similarities are. And I'd point you in the direction of looking at the Center for Public Safety Excellence when it comes to the 10 categories of managing a fire department. What I'm going to suggest right now, it doesn't apply to everybody, but it applies to about 90% of them. And that is that every fire department has the following. You have a reason to do a governance component. You got to know how you're governed. You got to know what your risks are. Okay, you got to have a management structure and leadership structure. You have to have a financial component. You have to have a program component. You have to have a human resources component. You have to have a physical facilities component. You have to have a training component and education component. Then you have to have an internal support mechanism, and you have to have an external support mechanism. Now, believe it or not, those 10 categories apply to almost every fire department in this country. The ones that might be subtly different are military departments and, to a certain degree, industrial fire brigades. But if you're getting ready for upward mobility, what am I now suggesting to you is that your training, your education, and your experience has to deal with all 10 of those categories.
Which is uniquely different. Not all of those are something you're going to go to the Fire Academy or the U.S. Fire Administration or FEMA or any of these platforms. You're talking about going back to school.
That is correct.
Or internships or sabbaticals.
Yeah.
Has that been discussed at all within the stake training community about doing sabbaticals where guys can go and do a 3 months someplace else and come back? Because it's difficult to cover all 10 of those subjects with any depth in some of the organizations because they're so minor in comparison to what they would be somewhere else.
Well, I can't honestly say that it's been explored in depth in this country. However, it has been explored in the context of the fire profession. In Europe, they practice a concept called secondment. And what secondment is they'll take a top-level officer from one organization, and they'll take him and put him into a bigger organization for a period of time. Example is that they'll take somebody from a fire brigade in Wales and put him in the London Fire Brigade for 6 months. It's called secondment, which means I'm seconded to that particular organization. Most American fire departments don't view that as being part of the succession planning process. However, there are departments that have practiced it. It's just not a common practice.
Well, they're very good at doing that within the operational component, and where you'll take somebody out of HR and you put them into operations, and then you'll put them into logistics, and then maybe they'll end up in charge of communications. So rotating people around at that level. But that doesn't necessarily prepare you for the skills that you need to have if you're going to be at the top looking down.
That's correct.
I'm curious, also at the stake level, how important has education become in the discussions with training officers across California, or even nationally for that matter?
Well, we should clarify what stake means, because this might be heard by people who don't live in California.
Good point.
It stands for the Statewide Training Education Advisory Committee, and it's an advisory committee to the state fire marshal in California about certification standards and curriculum. Almost every state has a system like that. They just call it by something different. I mean, different states have different kinds of components. But education has significantly changed over the last 25 or 30 years. I can remember an early part of my career when I was going to school, I had chief officers say I was wasting my time. What are you taking those stupid classes for? I mean, you know how to be a fireman, blah, 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 blah. That today, it's not uncommon to run an oral board and have people show up, entry-level firefighters who've already gone through a fire academy and have a bachelor's degree.
Mm-hmm.
The educational component is changing because our society has more access to education in general.
Now, all of us here sitting here today listening have known people that have all kinds of credentials after their name, masters in public administration, what have you. And at the same time, we know that person isn't qualified to do a thing. There are other attributes that people need to be thinking about over and above just education. And what would you point those out to be?
Remember my comment about Dr. O'Neill talks about experience?
Mm-hmm.
You know what experience translates to? Performance. Experience is doing something and actually finishing something. I'd make the case here, this is why the Center for Public Safety Excellence program on chief officer designation is so important, because we don't reward people for just having certificates. We reward them for being able to demonstrate performance. And what we're talking about here now is something that's difficult to assess in a sweeping generality, mm-hmm. but is very specific when it comes to the person. That is, if you can't describe what you have done with your education and your training and your experience, then do you have any proof of your competency?
So having the parchment is not enough. It's having done something with the parchment that actually becomes important. You've talked in other shows about the role of fire chief and promotion and what have you, but you've also sat in organizational structures where you've hired the fire chief or you've been part of the
Yes.
fire chief hiring process. What are you looking for at that level for the fire chief?
Well, the answer to that is going to sound a little bit ambiguous, but I'm going to call it as I see it, and that is we're looking for somebody who can do the job that is demanded of that fire chief's position. In other words, are they the right person with the right background, with the right motivation to do a good job? In other words, what we're saying is that there is no cookie cutter approach. Everybody is going to always want to look like so-and-so. It's a mistake sometimes for us to think that a person could be a success one place is automatically going to be a success somewhere else, because the needs might be different. There are three areas that I personally believe that's very important. One is in labor management relationships. Second is in between management and management relationships, meaning between the fire department and the governance organization. And thirdly, the relationship between the fire department and the community. Those are three different environments where different skill sets are brought to bear.
Well, I know in some organizations they become so contaminated with internal politics and what have you, or within a community, an organization becomes contaminated, or polluted, if you will, and it almost what you don't need is the expert. What you need is a marriage family counselor type of person to come in there to mend the fences. So it's a temporary position of sorts. 3 to 5 years, you come in, you rebuild the relationships, you rebuild the infrastructure, you get people moved around so that the organization's functional,
yeah.
and then you bring in the guy that has all of the background.
Well, now you're talking about a different thing. Actually, there is a difference between facilitation of that and somebody who's going to come in and going to be there for a while.
Mm-hmm.
In my experience in working with organizations, there is no such thing as the perfect fire chief. Every individual has a profile, and every community has a profile. And the more you can marry up those two profiles, the more likely you are to have a success. See if I can give an example without burning any bridges here, but I've known of people who have been extremely successful in one setting that have had tremendous difficulties in another because they tried to put square pegs in round holes. And so what you're talking about there a minute ago opens up another topic, and that's the role of interim chiefs and the role of acting chiefs and the role of short-term chiefs versus career individuals.
Mm-hmm.
That's a different set of circumstances.
Another area that I think that I want to touch on here is that it's easy to build that resume up and to come in with the box full of certs and quals and what have you, but that is only one component of the hiring process. What about presentation? How can people work on their presentation for the oral board or to the city council or be better politically savvy too is another component of that, though it's not something you necessarily go to school learn how to do.
Best advice I could give a candidate is don't talk about yourself, talk about their problems. Study the locations that you're getting ready to take an exam for and be aware of what their needs are. Understand their problem and be able to articulate how you would resolve it.
Well, that requires research, and that also means that you have to come in to the interview process potentially with some sort of idea of a plan mm-hmm. on what you would do. What do you bring to the table to offer to this organization other than just yourself? And that requires research. And do most of the people have the ability to do that today, or do you find that?
The more qualified candidates understand that almost intuitively.
Mm-hmm.
The average candidate usually learns it the hard way. And the unqualified candidate never gets it. They think it's all about them. And what I would suggest is that one of the things that is really important as we change this whole idea of professional mobility is that the top-level candidate going into a job understands their strengths and their weaknesses and knows how they fit that organization before they even go to the oral board.
So that would suggest then that you don't apply just for every chief's job that opens up, but that you have a better understanding of the cultural environment of that place so that you're going to fit in.
Well, I don't want to deny guys a chance to practice. I mean, you can apply as many times as you want, but when you're ready for that last step, about the best way I'd kind of describe it is that last step is not a chasm. What it is a crossing of a line. You step across a line that is invisible in many ways, but very real in other ways. And what we're talking about here, professional mobility has to do with being really prepared to deal with what's going to be thrown at you the day you go to work. In one of my columns, I used to call it the 100-day war. What happens to you in the first 3 months may often determine what your sense of security is going to look like 5 years from now.
Well, I would think, too, that as guys get into that position, they're looking to move on themselves. Because what's the average life expectancy of a fire chief in most organizations? 5, 7 years?
Five to seven years.
Because after that, what's your effectiveness potential?
Well, a lot of that depends on the skill set, again. Mm-hmm. I've known fire chiefs that have been fire chiefs for 30 years. And I've known people who didn't last probationary period. You know, and the issue here is tenure is directly linked to the person's ability to meet the needs of the organization. And I'm talking about all the needs, not just one set of needs.
Well, we're up to the end of our segment. Any closing thoughts for our listeners?
Don't be surprised if you go for a fire chief's job of something they tell you're going to have to do that you didn't know before you got hired.
Well, with that thought, be safe out there.
This has been Table Talk with Ronald J. Coleman and Michael S. Williams, produced and distributed by the Fire Services Training Institute. Production assistance by Mark A. Ward. Special thanks to Chief Michael Dyer and the Santa Barbara County Fire Department. Remember, train like your life depends on it, because it does.
Table Talk programming is intended for personal and organizational use only. Any duplication or commercial use is prohibited.